Jesus tells parables, and some pigs die. Hello, and welcome to Probe, a weekly program that focuses on biblical topics and discussion. This quarter, we've been talking about the Gospel according to Mark. Our lesson this week is entitled, By Galilee. My name is Paul Dibdall, and I am joined this week by John Dibdall, former professor in the Walla Walla College School of Theology, who now serves as president of the college, and Bruce Johansson, New Testament professor and a frequent participant on this program. Welcome to you both.
Good to be back, Paul.
Thank you.
Well, I began by not summarizing, but giving at least a snapshot of a couple of things that we come across in this section of Mark, Mark chapters 4 and 5. Jesus tells parables, and he does come face to face with a demoniac, and as a result of that interchange, some pigs do die. And we'll touch on both of those. But first, the parables. First, the parables. It seems to me that Christians today typically view parables as kind of a simple children's story, that the moral is clear at the end. So we have a nice little illustration, and then kind of the moral, boys and girls, is be nice to your parents or share your toys. It seems, though, as we read these parables, that the original hearers didn't respond in quite this same way.
No.
What were the parables? How were they originally received by people?
It's really interesting that he does tell parables, and he does pick up very simple things from their daily lives that they would be well acquainted with. But when he tells these parables, there will always be a little twist, almost always a little twist to them, a little unusual something to them, that if a person stops to think about it, maybe they weren't such a neat little illustration of what I thought it was. And they're more like riddles in many cases. And what a riddle does is to tease your mind and hopefully your spirit to dig deeper. Mm-hmm. And so it says that he tells these so that hearing they may not hear, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's kind of a teasing way of saying when you listen to these parables, you may hear it, you may not. Mm-hmm. It depends on you how much you're going to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're parables of the kingdom. So they do say something deeper than just a riddle.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that he talks about sowing and the seed and the different things. That one seems so nice and clear. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But then what do you do with it? Some bear fruit 30, 60, 100-fold, and you're sort of left pondering. Now, that's true with soil, but how is it with people?
Mm-hmm.
And then your mind begins to spin with that and work on that. So I think parables are to be pondered rather than a person should think that I've got this one down.
Okay. Maybe not at the end of the parable, maybe we shouldn't have clearly in our mind, well, here were the 2 points that Jesus was teaching, point A and point B, but it's more process of interaction with what he said and a kind of discovery.
Yeah.
Instead of Jesus laying it all out there for us in black and white, so to speak.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's very true, and I've wondered, too. It doesn't say that exactly here, but it does seem to me that you have in chapters 2 and 3 of Mark all this controversy, all these questions from people who are opposing him on things, and then he begins to speak in parables. And it seems to kind of quiet things because people are, as Bruce said, puzzling and wondering and trying to understand. It's not as clearly confrontational, at least in this case, as the other things may be. And I think it's interesting when you come down to the conclusion here verse 33 in chapter 4, with many such parables he spoke the word to them. As they were able to hear it, he did not speak to them without a parable, but privately to his own disciples he explained everything. So he's saying the crowds were seemingly somewhat baffled, and he would speak to them and they weren't exactly sure, and even his disciples weren't sure and had to be privately told exactly what was happening. The parable seems to have kind of diffused, at least in this case, maybe not always, but at least in this case, seems to have diffused some of the questions, but at the same time baffled the crowd and even puzzled the disciples to a certain extent. And if Jesus is the master teacher, maybe that would say something to those of us who are teachers, that maybe just simple, straightforward answers all the time may not be the best way to get people to think.
As frustrating as it is for a student who wants an answer to the question, it may be best not to, as a teacher, not to provide the answer, but instead encourage this process of discovery. I'm intrigued also by something you said about, I don't remember the words exactly, but the sort of veiling of truth, so that it's not crystal clear to all those who are listening. Mm-hmm. Are there times when it's best to hide the truth from people if we feel that they aren't prepared to receive it?
Well, it seems to say very directly, as they were able to hear it. That, to me, seems to imply very clearly that you do audience analysis, so to speak. You do try to ascertain what people can understand and how they will react. Jesus didn't, I think some people kind of have this idea of Jesus doesn't care what people think and, you know, whatever, you know, he'll do it. But at least in these cases, it seems like he's very carefully listening to his audience and trying to nuance what he says in a way that gets the best hearing, so they're able to hear it and able to bear it.
I think there's times to not say certain things straight out because it might hurt. Harm that person or hurt that person more than the benefit. They were not ready for it. I do think so. I think there are times also when you have to come out and say things fairly straight. The Christian will be always, I think, be a sensitive person to where people are at, and of course we'll all make mistakes.
If it was as easy, I suppose, as always giving the same answer to everyone who asked, or always telling the same story, or presenting the same truth, we could have a formula, and if that's all it was, it would be simple, but perhaps more harm than good would come from that. So I guess I see a real need for us as witnesses to know when to share, how to share, what to say, and
what not to say.
In being sensitive, and sometimes what not to say, we're following the example of Jesus. It's not just that we're wimping out or afraid of the truth.
Good point. One of the things I would say in connection with parables and stories is it does seem to me that there is a what I would call mistaken idea held by many people, that if it's a story or if it's a parable, it's simpler. It's not as sophisticated. Bright people use abstract language. And if you're simple and if you aren't quite as educated as someone else, then you might tell a parable or a story. This clearly tells me that the use of parable and the use of story is a very sophisticated kind of thing.
It is.
And isn't a lesser way of teaching or dealing with people. So an encouragement to all those who believe in and use stories and parables, that not only did Jesus do it, but even looked at from an intellectual standpoint, it's challenging and it's powerful.
Good. We have, there's all kinds of things that we could talk about in these two chapters. We've talked about parables. Before we end, though, there is this account in chapter 5. We have a demon-possessed man. Jesus and his disciples go across the lake, and they're met by this man who has an evil or an unclean spirit who comes from the tombs to meet Jesus. And we have this, it's a real, really kind of fearful description of him. He couldn't be bound, not even with a chain. He was able to break those chains. No one was strong enough to subdue him. And then this kind of pitiful and yet frightening picture, night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. Jesus and his disciples arrive, and he ran and fell at his knees in front of Jesus. And I don't know, that there's different elements in this story here, questions that I have about it. In what way is evil both attracted to Jesus? It's interesting to me that he runs to Jesus. And yet, when the demon speaks, there seems to be, you know, a sort of fear of Jesus. Any thoughts on that? Or shall I just keep asking questions?
I don't know what to say about that specific question, but I do know from my experience that in Western culture, probably the stories of exorcisms like this are probably the most problematic areas of the gospel for most people, because in our culture, at least for most people, now that's changing, I think, in many cases, but for most people, 20th century modernist viewpoint, this whole deal that demons could speak and do these kinds of things and enter pigs and all that are just, well, mind-boggling and probably unbelievable, or what the, would say maybe a figment of a primitive worldview or something like that. And you go to other parts of the world, Africa and Asia, and these stories are as real and as relevant as anything. So we have a real problem. We're speaking here to people from a Western cultural background, and they have a hard time with these stories. And I guess as I grow older and having lived in other cultures, I have to say that I think that something real happens here, but exactly how to apply it in the situation which I find himself, I'm not sure, except to say that Jesus, the kingdom of God is broken in. Jesus has power over all other powers. At least we can simply say that. But to explain the details, boy, maybe Bruce can do something that I can
for
do
me,
here.
It's terribly important that Jesus has power over demonic
right.
forces,
right.
however you might describe those.
That's right.
Right before this, he stills a storm, which says something about his power over nature. These are statements about Jesus.
That's right.
And he has power over demonic forces. I have to chuckle that the pigs are the ones who suffered in the end. But you know, in the story, there's a very sad, that makes up a very sad part of this story, because the villagers come out.
That's right.
They've lost their money.
Mm-hmm.
And they're more concerned about that than this man sitting clothed in his right mind and healed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you have the same kind of sad picture of the Pharisees saying Jesus' work is the work of the devil. And you have these people who want to get rid of Jesus because they don't care about this poor fellow who's now in his right mind and not suffering any longer. And it's a commentary that where goodness, true goodness is, you will get these kinds of reactions.
Okay. Good news, Jesus is still more powerful than the demons. Thank you, John and Bruce, and thank you, Susan Michael, our production director. And finally, thank you for listening in. I hope you'll join us again next week. For Probe, I'm Paul Dibdahl.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194 or email us at probe@wwc.edu. Thanks for listening. We'll be here next week at this time with Probe.